Well, good afternoon and evening, and wherever you are, perhaps it's morning. This is the study for today. I'll give the date first like I normally do. I was going to give my name first, but that's not the way I normally do it. It's March 29th, 2023, 1723 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green here. So today, first of all, I forgot yesterday, little children, to do the proverb. I was intending to do Proverbs yesterday, 30, if you take my word for it. Believe it or not, I was thinking of Proverbs 30. Where is it? It's down here. Here it is. Yesterday, but I missed this. I forgot to do this. Proverbs 30 and verse 2 says, "For I am more unreasoning than anyone else, and I do not have the understanding of mankind." An interesting, humble expression there. Today's proverb, which I would like to do also, is Proverbs 21, verse 3. "To carry on righteousness and judgment is more preferable to Jehovah than sacrifice." That reminds me of what happened with King Saul also, because something happened with King Saul, and he had to be reminded by the prophet Samuel about this scripture here, because Saul was attempting to sacrifice as a substitute for doing righteousness because he had not carried on righteousness. And he thought he could make it better by performing a sacrifice. He thought he could atone for his error using sacrifice. But it was not what Samuel approved of, because Samuel, he knew what Jehovah approved and what Jehovah preferred. It was about preference. Jehovah preferred, as Samuel says here in 1 Samuel 15 and 22, "Does Jehovah have as much delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of Jehovah? Look, to obey is better than a sacrifice, to pay attention than the fat of rams." So paying attention and being righteous are more valuable to Jehovah than sacrifice. That doesn't mean that sacrifice is completely worthless, but it's just to be preferred that we not need to offer any sacrifice because we've been righteous. And when we are righteous, we don't need to offer a sacrifice. That's the idea. And of course, in the case of Jesus, his sacrifice was not on his own behalf, but he was offering a sacrifice on behalf of all mankind when he offered his own life as a sacrifice. That was because of the sacrifice that was necessary as a result of the sin of Adam, that all mankind had become a part of the sin of Adam and had become guilty by means of Adam, by means of inherited sin. Now, we are going to hopefully look at today's Bible reading, which is Genesis 29. But first of all, today's chapter in the Wild Road article, today's paragraph is chapter 5, paragraph 4. It's part 1 of Wild Road Ahead to History by yours truly. It's the paragraph that has a heading called Admonitions of Ipuwer. This is an Egyptian document, an Egyptian scroll or papyrus, which is from ancient times, and it's in evidence. And let's read this paragraph. "Evidence for the Israelite exodus from Egypt is claimed by a great many modern scholars as lacking. They say there's no evidence for the exodus from Egypt, in other words, as though they reject such testimony of the Bible record. Because the Bible tells us there was an exodus. The implication is, in their terms, that all proof of the presence of Israel in Egypt, as well as of their departure from the Egyptian political scene, must be from sources which do not corroborate the Bible, as they reject that source. So many of the worldly authorities, not all of them certainly, but many of the worldly authorities would have no part in the Bible. They don't want to have anything to do with the Bible or with God, Jehovah, at all. So any source that they use, it cannot be in harmony with the Bible, because they reject the Bible. So the contrary view is, logically, and contrary to those people, logically, that once one accepts the Bible as the primary testimony on the subject, all that then remains to be done is to find out what other evidence there is that might provide one confirmation. Because if the Bible is believed, all we need is one confirmation, anything that confirms it. Critics have long argued that no Egyptian contemporary records exist that confirm an Israelite exodus, although New Kingdom Egypt has few papyri. The papyrus is the singular and papyri is the plural. More than one papyri. There are a few papyri surviving in evidence. We currently believe less than 1% have survived. And official records would typically seek to encourage Egyptian officials, that means the contemporary records of the time of Israel being in Egypt, the Egyptian records would typically seek to encourage Egyptian officials and thus would avoid embarrassments. So, since Israel left Egypt and triumphantly marched out as free men and women and children, because they were victorious over the Egyptians as they marched out of their slavery, this would be an embarrassment to the Egyptian officials, and they would not record this event. They wouldn't make it a record in the official Egyptian governmental documents. It wouldn't be that. They would just ignore it as far as their official records go, as far as those records would have gone. They would not have reported about this because it was an embarrassment. I mean, we would logically believe that would be the logical thing we would expect. So even though there may not be any contemporary Egyptian records, we wouldn't expect any because it was embarrassing for the Egyptians to lose all of those slaves, hundreds of thousands of slaves, all of whom escaped and just were set free. So when confirmation is sought for the Bible record, with the idea that the Bible is the chief testimony, we are acting out of faith. We need faith because there are certainly a majority of people, at least in many places, who don't believe the Bible at all. So we are acting out of faith consistent with Bible principles. We act. From this viewpoint, there is indeed a papyrus record. When we have faith, we can see that. And that record in the Egyptian papyrus documents is called the Admonitions of Ipuwer. And this document we are going to present in the next paragraph, in our next study, as a way to confirm that the Exodus did in fact take place and is recorded in this Egyptian document, Admonitions of Ipuwer. The scripture from Romans 14 and 23 says, everything that is not out of faith is sin. and the document, the admonitions of an Egyptian sage, is in fact an article from 1969, which was written with regard to this Egyptian papyrus, Admonitions of Ipuwer, but the article was called The Admonitions of an Egyptian Sage by Alan H. Gardner in the year 1969 that was written. What was that? Is that a book? It's not clear. It looks like that's a book. The Admonitions of an Egyptian Sage by Alan H. Gardner, page 18. Sounds like a book. We'll have to research that to find out what that is. And that's all for the article, well wrote, for today. So we have to examine what this means, or what the evidence is with regard to the Egyptian papyrus that we've just mentioned. We haven't looked at it yet, but we're just preparing to study that, and that's all we need to say for today. And our study from Genesis for today, little children, is Genesis 29. This is certainly a very, very telling chapter in the book of Genesis. After that, Jacob set his feet in motion and traveled on to the land of the Orientals. Now he looked, and here there was a well in the field, and here three droves of sheep were lying down there by it, because from that well they were accustomed to water the droves. And there was a great stone over the mouth of the well. When all the droves had been gathered there, they rolled away the stone from off the mouth of the well, and they watered the flocks, after which they returned the stone over the mouth of the well to its place. So Jacob said to them, "My brothers, from what place are you?" To which they said, "We are from Haran." Then he said to them, "Do you know Laban, the grandson of Nahor?" To which they said, "We know him." At this he said to them, "Is it all right with him?" In turn they said, "It is all right. And here is Rachel, his daughter, coming with the sheep." And he went on to say, "Why, it is yet full day. Is it not the time for gathering the herds? Water the sheep, then go feed them." To this they said, "We are not allowed to do so until all the droves are gathered." And they actually roll away the stone from off the mouth of the well. "Then we must water the sheep." While he was yet speaking with them, Rachel came with the sheep that belonged to her father, for she was a shepherdess. And it came about that when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, Jacob immediately approached and rolled away the stone from off the mouth of the well and watered the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and raised his voice and burst into tears. And Jacob began to tell Rachel that he was the brother of her father and that he was the son of Rebekah. And she went running and telling her father. Now it came about that as soon as Laban heard the report about Jacob, the son of his sister, he went running to meet him. Then he embraced him and kissed him and brought him on into his house. And he began to relate to Laban all these things. After that, Laban said to him, "You are indeed my bone and my flesh." So he dwelt with him a full month. After that, Laban said to Jacob, "Are you my brother, and must you serve me for nothing? Tell me, what are your wages to be?" As it was, Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger, Rachel. But the eyes of Leah had no luster, whereas Rachel had become beautiful in form and beautiful of countenance. And Jacob was in love with Rachel. So he said, I am willing to serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. To this Laban said, it is better for me to give her to you than for me to give her to another man. Keep dwelling with me. And Jacob proceeded to serve 7 years for Rachel. But in his eyes, they proved to be like some few days because of his love for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, give over my wife, because my days are up, and let me have relations with her. With that, Laban gathered all the men of the place and made a feast. But it turned out that during the evening he resorted to taking Leah, his daughter, and bringing her to him that he might have relations with her. Moreover, Laban gave to her Zilpah, his maidservant, even Leah, to Leah, his daughter, as a maidservant. So it followed in the morning that here it was Leah. Consequently, he said to Laban, what is this that you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served with you? So why have you tricked me? To this Laban said, it is not customary to do this way in our place, to give the younger woman before the firstborn. Celebrate to the full the week of this woman. After that, there shall be given to you also this other woman for the service that you can serve with me for 7 years more. Accordingly, Jacob did so and celebrated fully the week of this woman. After which, he gave him Rachel, his daughter, as his wife. Besides, Laban gave Bilhah, his maidservant, to Rachel, his daughter, as her maidservant. Then he had relations also with Rachel, and also expressed more love for Rachel than for Leah. And he went serving with him for yet 7 years more. When Jehovah came to see that Leah was hated, he then opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. And Leah became pregnant and brought a son to birth, and then called his name Reuben, for she said, it is because Jehovah has looked upon my wretchedness, in that now my husband will begin to love me. And she became pregnant again and brought a son to birth, and then said, it is because Jehovah has listened, in that I was hated, and so he gave me also this one. Hence she called his name Simeon. And she became pregnant yet again and brought a son to birth, and then said, now this time my husband will join himself to me, because I have borne him 3 sons. His name was therefore called Levi. And she became pregnant once more and brought a son to birth, and then said, this time I shall laud Jehovah. She therefore called his name Judah. After that, she let off giving birth. So that is the very, very informative account of what transpired after Jacob arrived with his relatives, to visit his relatives and to take a wife, in Paddan Aram. And Laban, as we learned earlier, was a brother of Rebekah, who married Isaac, the father of Jacob. So they were close relatives. And you notice here the word Orientals, because Orient means the East, and typically the Orient, which was later misunderstood to mean the Far East and Japan, China, all those Far Eastern places, the Orient originally meant the Near East, or the Middle East, the area east of the Promised Land was east, certainly, and therefore it was called the Orient, because the Orient means the east, or the rising of the sun, the land of the sunrise. And the sun, as we know, rises in the east. If you've ever looked at where the sun rises and looked at your compass at the same time, the sun rises in the east. So a lot of things transpired in this particular account, and Jacob had a preference for one of the 2 daughters of Laban, as we saw, but Laban tricked Jacob. And we learned that that was, according to Laban, the customary thing to do, which was to give the older daughter in marriage before the younger one. Perhaps it doesn't seem entirely unreasonable, but from Jacob's standpoint, it may have seemed rather unreasonable, to say the least, to be given a different wife than the one he was expecting and hoping for. But the other thing was, if we recall, remember when the servant of Abraham had visited with the family of Laban earlier, and Rebekah had been sent or allowed to leave and to go to marry Isaac, and they had requested, Laban and his family had requested that Rebekah be allowed to stay for some days, as though there was some hesitancy to simply just let Rebekah go, of course. And they didn't want to just let her leave all of a sudden, because this man just arrived and they didn't want her to go. But then they let Rebekah go. They had let Rebekah leave without seeing her. So shortly after this servant's arrival, he was just Abraham's servant. They didn't really know this man. He had arrived, and then Laban's sister, their family member, had just departed shortly thereafter. She didn't stay with them for any period of time after this man arrived. So Laban knew about that. I mean, he would have remembered that, very likely. So for him to be doing things in a very rigid sort of, perhaps unreasonable way, but maybe it's not unreasonable because it was customary to give the older daughter first, but for him to be rather strict in his application of that custom is perhaps not all that surprising, seeing as what had happened some years earlier, and this is some 90 years earlier. Is that true? It's more than that. It's not that much. It could be more than 90 years earlier, actually. Because, yes, Isaac married Rebekah when he was 40, and it was 20 years before he had his two sons, Esau and Jacob, 20 years later, so... Jacob was 90 years old when he, or 80 or 89 or 90 or 91, I should say 91, when he had Joseph. But Joseph was one of his later sons. He had 12 sons. I'm trying to think how many years it was. 14 and 10. I'm thinking 10. From Levi. 10 years before he had Levi. So he had 7 years and then 3 years and then Levi, something like that. So 10 years after he arrived, and then he had, after 4 more years, he had Joseph. So that's 7 years. Let's see, 14. It's 14 years, I should say. 14 years from 91 would be 77 years old. I think, yeah, it's approximately right, but I mean, I could check it. We can check it later. If Jacob had been 77 years old when he arrived there, we'd have to add 20 more years, plus the pregnancy, the time that Rebekah... Wait a minute. No, Isaac was 60. No, it's just 20 more years, exactly. 20 more years at the time from the time of the marriage of Rebecca and the birth of her son was 20 years of her two sons, Esau and Jacob. That was 20 years. It's getting warm. All of a sudden, it's just getting very warm. I just had a haircut. I should be able to. I need to get this. It's off. Yeah, it's really. I think I'll take everything off here. Just had a haircut last night. So if it's 77 years old plus 20 years is 97 years. If Jacob was about 77 years when he arrived, 77 years old when he arrived in Paddan Aram, I believe, and we add the 20 years that it was before Rebecca had the birth of Esau along with Jacob, the two twins, 20 years plus 77 is 97 years. That means that 97 years ago, Laban had sent or allowed his sister to be sent off to go to marry Isaac. So it was 97 years ago, if that's even possible to imagine for someone today who does. We don't live that long, but they lived that long back in those days. So Laban, 97 years ago, he might have been thinking, I remember 97 years ago when Rebecca was sent away or allowed to leave, and they had never seen her again, apparently, probably. I don't imagine how they would have. She had gone away and not come back, as far as we know. So now Laban is rather strict in the way he insists that the customary practices must be followed. And Jacob must marry the older daughter first. So that's the story that we have, the Bible account, which is inspired by God, the biblical record, the Word of God, the book that has proved true so many ways on so many occasions. And now I would like to show you something, if I may. I showed you my watches yesterday. See whether this will work or not. There we go. So today I've received another watch. It's this one here on the upper right here, you see, with the aquamarine colored dial, the turquoise dial. It's a Russian watch, Vostok. It's a diver's watch. And I wouldn't say it's particularly a beautiful watch. It's not really for that reason that I bought it. It's actually quite a large watch. It's about the same size as the Live watch that you see to the lower right. It's about the same size. I've tried to keep them roughly the same proportional as they are in real life. So my 50-year-old broken watch is on the upper left. That was 38 millimeters in diameter. The Russian watch is about 41, upper right, and that's about the same as the Live watch in the lower right. And the Hamilton watch on the lower left is 44 millimeters. It's the biggest of the four. There's only three of them that work right now. Three of them work. But the new Russian watch, the interest that I have in that is because, first of all, it's not a very expensive watch. It's not terribly inexpensive, perhaps. It's not the cheapest watch at all. It's actually probably an expensive watch for if I were only buying one watch, that would have been an expensive watch, because I wouldn't have trusted that watch is going to work, you know, because it's not from a major brand. Although the Russian military use this watchmaker, the Vostok company makes watches for the Russian military, so I'm sure they make good watches. I'm sure, but we're not as sure of them in in North America as they are in Russia. So I would have had some doubt about whether I could trust it. It's remarkable how we have that difficulty in trusting. Is it not? It's unusual, and it's strange how we have difficulty in trusting anybody from a different country, or we just don't have as much knowledge about their technology, for example. But although we know the Russians have some wonderful technology because they've been involved in the space station and in launching spacecraft and things, they've had a lot of experience. We know that. We know their technology is good. We just don't have the same nearness, you know, the same familiarity with their culture and with their scientific endeavors and all the things that they've done, which are significant to do with technology. But this is a diver's watch. Okay, let's talk about this a little bit, what this is. The crystal, okay, the crystal of this watch is acrylic, which means it's very easily scratched, but you can also polish it again and make it free of scratches if you have to. But it's very strong against impact, whereas a sapphire, such as the two lower watches have, synthetic sapphire crystal as their glass, they're much more breakable, but you still have to hit them very hard to break them. But this acrylic here probably will never break. It's just that it would be damaged if you did strike it very hard. It wouldn't get shattered. It wouldn't shatter, probably. It may never shatter. It just might get bent out of shape or something. But this is a very, it's a diver's watch. It's a very, very interesting timepiece. And you can go 200 meters underwater with this watch. The most that either of these other two will go is 100 meters, I think. Something like that. But that's basically not even seriously a diver's watch if it's only 100 meters. Most divers would want to have something more like 200 meters if they're going to go underwater with their watch. I'm not going to plan to go underwater. I'm not currently planning either to go underwater with this watch. But if I'm ever going to be exposed to a large amount of water, or, you know, if I'm doing any work where there's a lot of water splashing around, I might wear this watch because it's got that water protection. You have to screw the crown down on. I think that's true of all these watches. Have the upper and the two lower, the upper right and two lower watches here. The other one here, the old one is not in service anyway, so it's not to be considered. The one on the upper left is not working anymore. But the other three watches, they all have these screw-down crowns, which you screw up tight against the case to give them their water resistance that they do have the capability for. These are all calendar date watches, and the Hamilton watch is a day date. It gives the day of the week as well. And I think that's a very handy thing. I didn't appreciate that, but having the actual day of the week and the day of the month right on the dial, that's going to give me a lot more confidence in my day-to-day activities, knowing what day of the month and what day of the week it is. In the morning, when I first wake up, I can just look at my watch and it will be there. So, I mean, I think that I've never had that feature ever in my life. Except on, I mean, even on my Casio, which I still have, it doesn't display the date of the month unless I press one of the buttons to display that. It shows the day of the week, but it doesn't show what the date is of the month. Unless I press a button, and then it does. It will say the month number and the, you know, and then maybe I can show you that. Let's see. 23/3/29. That's just difficult to show it. Let's see. Right, sort of. It's 23329 is what it says. When I press the upper right button, I can show the year, month, and day, but it's not constantly visible. It's not got the same utility. It's just not quite as useful. Now, I've done a test today. I want to report on the test. Since I just received the Vostok today, I don't know what the accuracy is. I'm looking at it right now. Let's see if it's lost any time. It was 35 seconds fast. Is that right? 20? What time is it now? 41. Has it gained any time? If I go to 35... I think it was 35 seconds. Now, 55. 55. Look, it might have gained 5 seconds already. What time did I receive the watch? That sounds right. Yeah. It could have gained 5 seconds already, but because if it gains 30 seconds every day, that's very possible. But because I received it sometime before or around noontime or before noon even. I've got it all written down. Got it all written down, but you know, I can't be looking at it all the time. I mean, it was sometime today it arrived, right? I don't need to find out every bit of information. I researched all day long. I was researching my new Hamilton watch, the lower left here, to find out. But let me report on what the timing is. The new Hamilton watch, by the way, it gains 12 seconds a day. It gains... Is it 12? In slightly more than a day, I guess. So it's possibly less than 12 seconds per day. But it could be, you know, it's roughly 10 or 12 seconds a day that this watch gains, the Hamilton, which is by far the more advanced watch, you would think. It's got more functions in it. But the Live watch, the lower right, I calculated it as being about 5.5 seconds per day, based on 2 days. It's gained about 5.5 seconds per day, which is not bad. That's pretty good. It's a little worse than what they specified or advertised, but it's not worse than the specification that they should have been quoting of 7 seconds per day. But these are all gaining time. These watches are gaining time. I have to check the Vostok now that I'm thinking. I have to check whether it's plus 35 or whether it was, I think it is. But when I was researching my Hamilton watch, I couldn't find anything about how old it was or what the model year was online. I couldn't find anything about that. It's very hard to find that out. Surprisingly, the Vostok watch is a 2022, made in 2022. So the only way I could find out when my lower left Hamilton watch is made, I could only find it by looking in the owner's manual that came with it. On the back of it, it said it was printed in March of 2021, that book. So that watch was released in March of 2021. That's a fairly recent edition also. The Live watch, I don't know if I've tried to find out what year that was actually released. No, I don't think I tried to find it. I haven't done everything. You can't do everything. There's so much to do. So the Vostok, it arrived, yeah. About 11 o'clock. 11:24, I synchronized it, and it was 35 seconds ahead at that time. 35 seconds. So just now I looked at it, and it looked like it was 40 seconds ahead, so it's gained 5 seconds in the time since 1124, which is now 1800 hours, so 1200 to 1800 is 6 hours. It's been 6 hours. It's been a quarter of a day, so 4 times 5 seconds, it would be 20 seconds per day it would gain, roughly. It looks like it's gaining 20 seconds per day at the moment, which is very, very reasonable for a watch that's, well, you know, six or seven times less expensive than the Live watch on the lower right here. I mean, it's much less expensive to buy the Vostok watch. And it's not a cheap watch, far from it. You can buy watches for about $20 or $30, and they're pretty good nowadays with the inexpensive nature of electronic devices nowadays, and the very simplest circuits and the availability of very easy to obtain semiconductor circuits in these chips that they have in the mass market. They can build watches very, very inexpensively. So it's not necessary to pay much for a watch, really. It's not. And my Casio is a fairly advanced watch with all these functions like an alarm, a chronograph, dual date, and it's only about $50 Canadian. That's a very inexpensive watch. But these watches are mechanical watches. They are self-winding. You can wind them with your hand manually as well, but they're self-winding, and you really don't want to be winding them manually in case that causes any harm to them for some reason. They do wind automatically. They're self-winding, so they wind using the movement of your wrist. As you move your wrist around, that winds the watch. All of them are like that. Even the least expensive, the Vostok, is a self-winding watch. The Russian watch, so I've got a Russian watch, and those two much more expensive watches are Swiss watches. And then there's still, we don't have every watch that we could conceive of yet, so we'll see what happens. But I think I'm not going to be able to wear all three of my watches unless I can find a way to wear another watch somewhere. I'm not wearing the Live watch right now. It's just sitting on the table. I was wearing it on my left wrist for a while. But you have to wear these self-winding watches or they will run down. Oh, that's another thing. The Hamilton watch that I'm wearing on one of my wrists, that has a 60-hour reserve. In other words, two and a half days, you can leave this watch lying on the table or in your drawer. Probably better in your drawer than on the table, but 2.5 days, you don't have to wind it and it will still be running. So that's a long reserve time. 60 hours is a long reserve time. The best that I've heard of in the industry is about 80 hours for some of the very best, which are very expensive watches. Even there's always more expensive watches. Rolex watches. If you get a chronograph like this one, a Rolex watch is like $50,000 right now, Canadian. $50,000, and that's because they're so hard to obtain them. That's probably not list price. That's the market. That's the market value. That's what people are willing to pay. They're $50,000. That's mine are nowhere near that. I'm not in the market to buy anything like that. I'm just not interested in paying such a high price for something that also is going to need maintenance and won't be cheap to maintain either. These watches will need maintenance. There's a lot to learn about them. They will need maintenance at some point in order to keep them running. And part of purchasing these watches is to make sure you buy a watch that you think has a mechanism that can be repaired by somebody. You know, rather than buying a mechanism that will be difficult to repair, you want to buy something that could be easily repaired, hopefully. So part of the shopping is trying to find a watch movement that is the guts of the watch, you know, the insides of it that can be repaired. A version of a watch that can be easily repaired, actually, you know, or cheaply repaired, not expensive to repair, or, you know, to maintain, that it can be maintained if it needs oiling, or which they do after a number of years. I don't know what I'm going to do with regard to that, but I know that other people maintain watches. It's a hobby for some people. They can get into the actual repairing of watches as a hobby. And you can, we can repair our own watches if we are interested in doing that. Or at least service them, you know, maybe not repair them as easily as, but I mean, to repair a watch, you have to take it all apart, completely disassemble it. Every screw has to be, there are, in some cases, more than 100 parts that have to be disassembled and then cleaned and then put back together and lubricated while reassembling. And the amount, the number of ways you could damage the watch while you're disassembling and reassembling it are innumerable. You could really damage your watch by doing it yourself. So you have to be very serious if we want to do that. We have to be very serious about our watches. But if you're qualified, or if you feel competent, I should say, if you feel like you'd rather be the one who does the work than have someone else do it, then I suppose, if you're that confident, maybe you can do it yourself. It's a very big job. And my main interest in these devices is the idea that they're mechanical, whereas everything else is electronic nowadays. These are mechanical devices. They just run based on a mainspring. Oh, I learned, by the way, that the hairspring is not silicon. I need to correct that. Yesterday I said the hairspring was silicon in this watch, but that was a review that I read that was not accurate. It was a different, or it was my mistake, perhaps. It was a different model that was being reviewed. It was a slightly different, or a vastly different model number. It was a different model number, but it started with the same two digits, I guess. But it wasn't the same model number that was being written about, that I was reading about, that told me that the hairspring was made of silicon. If I were to buy that watch, I priced it, and it was more than twice the price of this watch, or maybe at least 50% as expensive, depending on where you buy it. Because this, I very sadly learned that I could have bought this watch for a lot less money. Not half price, but a lot less. It's so much less that I was horrified to find out that I could have bought it for less money. But the more I thought about it, I realized that when you're paying a lot of money, what seems like a lot of money to someone who's not all that rich, for a watch, you don't want to buy from a retailer that with whom you've had no dealings. You don't want to buy from somebody whom you don't trust, you know. So I had to buy from the dealer in whom I had the most trust, and by doing that I had to pay more. But yeah, I don't even want to talk about it. The prices, I'm not ready to talk about the prices yet, because I haven't digested what it all means. Well, it doesn't cost anywhere near as much as it costs to buy a car. Nowhere near that. It's nothing like that. So, I mean, at least that's, you know, a big positive about it. They're not that expensive. But you could pay that much easily. Certainly, but there are a lot of watches you can buy for much less than a brand new car. Much less. I mean, I was looking at watches that were much more expensive than these. I bought the least expensive of these quality watches, the least expensive I could possibly afford, but the least expensive of them are the ones I bought. I didn't buy the most expensive one. But just to give you an example, there are, for example, one example is Zenith. Zenith makes Swiss watches, and they're like $10,000 Canadian, which is way out of my price bracket or my budget, way out of my budget. I'm not interested. I'm just not in the market to pay that much for a watch. Partly because what if something happens to it, for one thing? What if it doesn't work? You know, what if it breaks down? What, all these things that can go wrong. And it's a $10,000 watch. But maybe, you know, if I had more knowledge or confidence, I could have said, well, it's worth investing more money. And maybe I would have put more of my money into one single watch instead of buying two. But because I wasn't so sure about whether they were going to work, I bought two of these Swiss watches. That way, if one of them fails, I'm not stuck. I still have one that works, hopefully. And that was my reasoning, but initially that wasn't my reasoning. Initially, I thought I'd just buy the one, and then I realized that I really did want this particular watch, even though it was more expensive. I wanted it badly enough that I was willing to buy it in addition to this one. And that way, they're both fine pieces of timekeeping. To wear on the wrist. They're both fine. They're both more than acceptable as a timepiece, but also as a family heirloom. They can be passed on to other members of your family, you know, in the future, because they're well made, and they're not like many of the devices we have today, like computers and things that are, they're all perishing. They all vanish away. They don't last for many generations, for example, like some of these watches do. And the watchmakers are, for that reason, of great interest to me. The fact that they make these devices that are intended to be used for decades and decades and decades, you know, of loving care and of use in a very valued environment. But also, the other reason is they're accurate too. They're accurate, right? And now quartz watches are actually more accurate in most cases than the mechanical watches. But the inexpensive quartz watches are not so much accurate per se. That means you might have to reset them frequently. The beauty of a decent quality watch is how often you have to reset it is not as often as some other watches, and that's why a good mechanical timepiece is valuable, because it saves you time that you would otherwise have to spend readjusting your watch all the time, right? And the fact that they're automatic means you don't have to wind them, so you don't have to spend all your time winding your watch either. So there are a lot of interesting and fascinating things about these watches, things that I find fascinating, but not everybody is interested. Not everybody's interested in that. Just bash it on the table. Not everybody cares about mechanical devices. I'm fascinated, and they keep on producing new models every year, and there are many companies that do it. Rolex, Tudor, Live is one that's very little known, and Hamilton's a big one. They're a big company. Hamilton, Longines. I almost bought one of the Longines or Longines watches, which are available as chronograph models as well. They have something called the Avogator Big Eye chronograph. I almost bought that, but it would have cost me $3,500, I think, something like that, which is too much money for me, so I didn't go with that one. But also the Hamilton was the one that looked the most, the lower left here, it looked the most like my original upper left. It looked the most like it, and it was the one. That's the one I wanted to replace my upper left Waltham watch with 17 jewels. By the way, the Hamilton has 25 jewels in it. The Live, I believe, it's got the Sellita SW200-1 movement. I believe it's 26 jewels, that one. The Hamilton movement is the H-21 movement, which is 25 jewels, and it's based on the ETA / Valjoux 7750 chronograph movement, based on it, but it's modified and improved to give it, for one thing, it gives it the 60 hours of reserve power, which is more so than what these other watches will have in reserve power. They've got perhaps something like, well, maybe 30 some hours for each of these other watches in terms of reserve power. A little more, somewhat more than a day in case you don't wind them, in case you didn't wind them. They would still keep running for somewhat more than a day perhaps, but they don't have a lot of reserve power. They're both calendar, which is amazing. They have the calendar. I've set them both to the correct day. They both say the 29th. On my all of my watches say the 29th. And my Hamilton says Wednesday, which is today's date. It is, in fact, March, isn't it? 29th, 2023. It's 18:19 hours. It's been a pleasure. It's exciting right now, talking about everything, but I'm almost overwhelmed with the amount of research I have to do to find out what I've actually bought in terms of what value or what year, I mean, what all the information is that I need to know with regard to what model year they are, so that I can document them as accurately as possible and monitor them over time. And that's a lot of work. The more watches you have, the more work it is, as I'm discovering. I hope you enjoyed today's study, everybody, including all of us little children. And it is, of course, going to continue, hopefully, tomorrow, our study. But praise Jehovah, seek first the kingdom and God's righteousness, so that all these things may be added to you. And be happy. Also, consider about praying for the brothers who are building the new branch facility in Brazil. They're renovating it, I should say, and also whether you can help out in some other way with that work, in the worldwide work, as it's also called. If there's some way that you feel you would like to contribute, then consider that, and be prayerful. Praise Jehovah. God bless you. Remember what Jesus did. All the things that he did that demonstrated his love for mankind, including his sacrifice. In the end, at the end of his ministry, when he laid down his life on behalf of the entire human race, in place of the life of Adam, which Adam had squandered by his mistake, his sin. See, because when a man is perfect and he sins, how can his sin be by accident? For us today, for any imperfect human, it's easy to see how, if we sin, it could have been a mistake, because we're not perfect. Maybe we just made a mistake of judgment or some other mistake. Maybe we were born, as we all are, with some inherited sin. So we can't be sure that mistakes today are deliberate. In all cases, we can't be sure. In the case of Adam, he was perfect when he began, when he was created by Jehovah. He was perfect. So because he sinned, we know his sin was on purpose. It was deliberate, because he was perfect when he decided to commit that sin. So because his sin was deliberate, he no longer has anything to offer, no way to redeem his own life, which he lost by committing that sin. He can't get it back again because he can't. He's had a perfect life. He's given it up. The only way to pay for something that was perfect is to get another perfect one, right? So we got the perfect human, Jesus Christ, sent to earth by Jehovah, and he was offered in sacrifice to pay for the original Adam. And that's how the ransom was accounted for, and that's how the sin could be atoned for so that we can all have the hope of everlasting life. So it's 18:23 hours. Ward Green, March 29th, 2023. I love you all very much. And now it's 18:24 hours, actually, in a couple of seconds. I love you all very, very much. Good night, good evening, good morning, good day, whatever you're doing. Enjoy your work in all the work that you're doing. And bye for now.